Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We've had a long week last week. We're in Denver, Colorado, doing what we do for the folks at
OAUG, Oracle Applications Users Group, which I can now pronounce quite fine.
That's why I leaned on you for that, because I couldn't.
Well, I couldn't either when we first started in Denver. But no, we had a long week, but it was a very productive week. And then a doubleheader today. We've already done the High Velocity Radio Show this morning.
That's right.
Your lunch hour's a little bit off now.
I know.
This is going to be a fun segment, though, because we have with us a bunch of folks from Atlanta Tech Village. And would first like to introduce Miss Karen Houghton. How you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
We are doing well and delighted to have you. Now, we've had a couple of conversations about and around Atlanta Tech Village here in the studio before, but let's get all our listeners caught up. Can you just kind of give us an overview about mission and purpose and how this thing came about?
Sure. Atlanta Tech Village is a 103,000 square foot building right in the heart of Buckhead. Our founder, David Cummings, bought the building just this past December, so we're quite new. And it's a big vision. It's a vision for community. And it is a co-working facility, but it has private offices and suites. And our goal is to really serve entrepreneurs and tech startups in our city. We really want to support and inspire them to achieve success through a lot of fast connections and resources and a community that's there at their fingertips that can help them to be successful.
So now your role is community manager.
I'm a community manager, yes.
So now what does that mean on a day-to-day basis?
It essentially means that we run the day-to-day aspects of the village. So memberships, community, events, sponsorships, all of those different things. Whatever we can do to help a member be successful and feel part of our community, that's what we do.
Now, I believe David's looking at Tech Village as kind of a unique thing for the Atlanta market, at least, right? That where this is a whole, it's not just a place to do work. There's a lot of collaboration, and he wants to create some serendipity. Isn't that
an
important
component? Yes, we do a lot of,
this?
Different interactions and different activities that help to create the serendipitous conversations that occur. A lot of it's very organic. It could be, you know, a fully stocked snack room that people can come by and get snacks and coffee, all the way to our community lunches on Friday. Atlanta Tech Village offers free lunch Fridays, and we invite everyone around to come and have lunch, and it's free on us, and they can bring guests and potential investors and anybody they want, including their kids, just to kind of create a really cool atmosphere to have good conversations.
And you brought some villagers with you today.
We do. I've got five of our different members, a lot of great companies, a lot of great talent in this room right now.
Now, part of what we talked about in our relationship is we're going to spotlight on a regular basis some of the members. Was it hard to find these people, or are people excited about getting the word out about what they're doing?
People are always excited to get the word out. So we have a lot of members, and we just kind of floated the idea past them, and so many people really wanted the opportunity to share about the work that they've been doing.
So who do you got with you?
Right now we have Kurt here from Sidekick, and we also have Adam from Insight Pool.
All right, we'll start with them. Kurt, why don't you give a thumbnail sketch about what you guys are up to?
Yeah, so with Sidekick, our technology helps one business, one marketer, kind of market with other businesses doing cross-promotions. Every marketer I talk to, they never have enough advertising to do what they like to do, whether it's a five-person coffee shop or the SVP of digital at Citibank. Our technology lets them kind of spend their brand, spend their current audience while protecting it to kind of get that extended reach that they'd otherwise have to spend tens of thousands of dollars on a weekly basis to Google AdSense for.
So what prompted that idea? Where did the idea come from?
Talking with potential customers, actually. So, I mean, I've been part of a couple of big things in the past. Most recently, exit here with Vitru here to Oracle. You mentioned out at an Oracle Users Conference. And we were helping big brands with social relationship management, building a platform for P&G, for Buffalo Wild Wings, 22 Squared here in town. And we saw the best campaigns they were always working with were working with other brands, other organizations to try to get their word out.
And what compelled you to get to be part of the village?
Actually, a lot of just serendipity working with David Cummings. So we went through Flashpoint, which is a startup accelerator started by Georgia Tech. And David was one of our mentors through that. And so we were literally just around catching up with him on the second day that the village had their doors open, and loved what he was doing. Also made the commute a lot better for me and my co-founder, Jeremy. So we asked him how we could get an audience, and instantly he took us down to go find a room.
So you got a room now?
We have a room now.
And then, so what are you guys doing on a day-to-day basis? What stage are you at?
We're bringing on customers and accelerating pretty quickly. So we're growing. We just brought on a new member of our team last week for marketing, and just bringing on new customers right now.
So you're fully funded? Are you bootstrapping, or you have investors?
We've been bootstrapping. I mean, we're in a good place. Is that last year we'd started raising funds, and instead we took that off the table because we brought on a number of Lighthouse customers that really let us kind of drive what we needed to do. And as mentioned, Jeremy and I have done a few good things in the past, so we're able to have a good runway right now.
So now, do I go out as a business and find my own partner and then have you help us manage it and structure it? Or are you also a little bit of a matchmaker and help me find the right partner for my promotions?
We have done matchmaking in the past, and as the product continues to evolve, we'll do that. But almost every one of our customers right now, from day one, I ask, hey, do you know who you would market with today that sells the same person you're trying to reach? And our customers, the marketers, just roll off dozens and dozens of potential partners.
They have the sidekick in mind.
They have the sidekick in mind.
Right.
And everybody wants to be a superhero. So, you know, our joke is, you know, nobody wants to polish the Batmobile and do that. That's what we do. Our technology makes it easy so that you can shine in-house.
So you are a true sidekick, not a wingman.
Right. Yeah, I'm happy to do the grunt work. I mean, in most of the technologies I've built in the past, I believe that technology should do the place of grunt work to allow the creative types, the marketers, to really shine and do their job. So anything that really takes up time with doing those partnerships, if I can solve that technology-wise, I'm happy to do that.
Now, can you walk us through what an engagement looks like, one of your clients, or how you're working together?
Yeah, so one of our customers is Control Freak here in town. They, their company, their CEO is Ashish Mistry, and they sell video game controller add-ons. So they log into our system, and they set up cross-promotions that they do with other companies like Turtle Beach. Turtle Beach sells $200 headphones to the exact same person that Control Freak's trying to reach. But they also do online promotions with groups like iPlayCOD. That's about 500,000 people that play Call of Duty, one specific game, and they'll do cross-promotions with them. Or ManCrates is an e-commerce for gift, you know, e-commerce company that does gift baskets for men. There's just dozens of people that they've run cross-promotion after cross-promotion.
Right. With. So now, okay, so they already have been doing this in the past, I guess, in a more clunky way.
Yeah.
Now you come along. What are you doing to make their life easier?
So each one of those, with Control Freak specifically, and many of our other customers, to get each one of the promotions in the old clunky way down, took them between 30 and 40 hours per partner per month to launch those promotions. And they usually ended up doing them, too, on a one-on-one basis because it's the only way they could get analytics out of it. Instead, with us, they can get a cross-promotion up and going with multiple partners in as little as 15 minutes and know which partners they're helping the most and which partners are helping them the most. Because some of those partners may have very different goals than they have as well. So we kind of let everybody reach their same goals and take 30 to 40 hours down to 15 minutes.
So now how are you kind of logistically doing that? Because like you said, they might have different goals. Like maybe some people are more in the just kind of lead generation mode, but other people are in I need to sell this actual product mode, and maybe some have a freemium and some of them are more developed than that.
Yeah, and some of them are just looking for brand awareness as
right.
well. A lot of them with Control Freak, they're a very well-respected name in the gaming community. Simply just doing a promotion where your brand is seen with Control Freak is huge for so many of the brands that they work with as well.
So then they don't have an expectation of a clickback or anything like that?
Sometimes, no. A lot of times they do want clickbacks. It does depend on, like you mentioned, what their goal is. So our customers or their partners, sometimes they're looking for lead gen, brand awareness, or driving immediate sales. So we basically, through our platform, our customers can kind of set up what the template looks like, keeping their brand protected, and they specify things that their partners can change and customize for their unique goals, and also specify what they can't customize, because after all, they're the customers, they're the ones driving this exact partnership. And so with that, our platform basically handles the third party piece so that, you know, everybody's goals are kind of met while still allowing just limited customization where the partner allows.
But so now you go ahead.
Are you finding that you have a sweet spot, a specific industry or sector?
Yeah, I mean, we get leads on our website from really B2B and B2C companies across the board. But really where we get kind of that strongest pull from, and where we just, you know, the people won't let us leave the room when I call them to tell them what I'm doing, is like e-commerce companies. They already have a large online presence. They have tons of partners that contact them on a weekly basis saying, hey, we'd like to work with you, or I'm a blogger. Send me some product and I'll review your product. Well, it really matters whether that person has 5 people on Twitter or 5,000 people on Twitter. So that's kind of where we get the strongest pull, and where we see our customers see the immediate results is often those e-commerce companies or digital or local businesses with a large online presence.
And I would think that your company just evolves naturally, because the more partners I have and that you're kind of working with, you can pick some of them off to be future partners for you later on.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, it is nice to have kind of, you know, our customers introducing us to other partners.
Right, you're prospecting by helping.
Yeah.
Right?
In some degree, yeah, definitely. So, but we only make connections where it makes sense for both partners.
Right.
And to some degree, the partners do get to try the product for free and come on board with, you know, with our customers' promotions.
So I want to pull Adam into this conversation. We have with us from Insight Pool Chief Evangelist Officer Adam Wexler. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to learn all about Insight Pool here in just a moment. But first, give us a little bit of insight on life at the Village. What's it like at this place?
As Karen mentioned before, there's just a great sense of community. And I think the best part is the ability to just interact with others that are, you know, in similar spots on a daily basis. And, you know, we're going through the similar stuff. And you know, hey, we're all battling, and you know, at this stage in the game, we all need each other's support, and as well as, you know, it can certainly help accelerate things when other people are doing similar things and working on similar problems on a daily basis.
Now, what made you choose the Village as opposed to the other co-working space around town?
So yeah, so we were right before we moved in, we were actually subleasing. We were in a pretty fortunate spot. In fact, we were subleasing from a VC firm.
Oh, there you go.
Nice.
Fish where the fish are.
Absolutely. There, yeah. Right. But the Village was so attractive, and we were one of the original tenants, just because of, like I said before, it's just the community that, you know, I think it's no wonder why so many people have gravitated towards it quickly. I mean, there's a list of people that are waiting to be a part of it, because they've just heard so much commotion coming through. And obviously Karen and company have done a great job putting on events. And
Karen has done an exceptional job.
Why, thank you.
So now you're with Insight Pool.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about what you guys are up to.
Yeah, so we describe Insight Pool as social marketing automation. So it's all about allowing brands to, you know, the front end is define your objective, and then use the technology to identify and engage with the most relevant influencers, prospects, customers to ultimately drive those objectives.
Now, I see in some of your literature this idea of social marketing automation. Mm-hmm. And I got to be honest with you, it scares me a little bit. It feels like I'm losing control of it and it can get away from me. So speak to that a little bit, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think marketers, I should point out that, believe me, spam is something that we surely do not want to be tossed into that category, if that is in any way related to what you're referencing. But on a daily basis, you know, marketers are trying to get their message out at scale. But yet, especially from a mass perspective of advertising or marketing, you know, they're not exactly resonating. They're not exactly driving people to action by just blasting it out to the masses. So what we're trying to do is literally facilitate one-to-one engagements, but at scale. So in a highly personalized fashion, addressing you by name, but also using different data points about you to really make it resonate.
You can automate all that. Man, exactly.
That's the secret sauce there.
I know a lot more about you than you think.
Apparently.
So now, how important does content actually play in this?
I mean, content in terms of the existing content that I think marketers are producing specifically on the social side, the way I look at Insight Pool is a great way to extend the life of that content, because you know they're spending a lot of time developing these content calendars, you know, trying to condense it if it's on Twitter into 140 characters.
Right.
Obviously, on Facebook, there's that whole component of visual and whatever the balance may be. But with Insight Pool, once again, you know, rather than blasting it out to the masses, we're all about figuring out what are the different segments of your audience that are going to be most relevant to this specific messaging. And then over time, you know, appeal to different segments.
How do you take the piece of content and then kind of repurpose it into the platform that makes sense?
Yeah, so I think that the key is the targeting on the front end. Because your audience, you know, whether it's 100 people, whether it's 100,000 people.
Because that's irrelevant, the number, right? Because once you have the system should work and scale.
Absolutely. And on the front end, you know, we build out these rich data profiles on the individuals. And then based on that information that we aggregate about each individual, we're able to do the targeting. And this is laser-like targeting that happens in an instant, you know, really depending on if you're looking for moms, if you're looking for dads that are interested in basketball, whatever the objective may be. And then, you know, taking that content, like you said before, and just, you know, framing it towards that person, addressing them by name, and telling them essentially why you're engaging with them.
I bet you see some of the same things over and over when you first start working with an organization. You roll your eyes and you say, oh, here they go again. What kind of mistakes do you see social managers making out there?
It's a good question. These days, I think the biggest thing is too many social media managers are kind of operating in La La Land, you know, for the longest time.
And where exactly is La La Land?
It's up in the cloud somewhere.
I knew it. Everything's in the cloud. You get that all the time.
It's between the cloud and broke is where La La Land is.
Is it near big data?
You know, I think I've heard the two might be related. Well, it's big nothing if there's not anything, any context to it. But yeah, so many brands have been wrapped up in, you know, the rat race of I need to just get as many fans as possible.
Right. They're just accumulating numbers of people that may be irrelevant to them or phony. How many times are you seeing that these people have a gazillion followers and half of them are fake or robots?
Fake followers. Yeah. No, I mean, that's not, you know, in anywhere where we're living. We're trying to, you know, ultimately, basically give you as much insight into your existing fan base, but better yet, your relevant universe. We kind of build a universe around your brand of similar audiences that can relate. And in that respect, you know, in a completely different way, we're facilitating, you know, what Sidekick and some others are doing just in terms of allowing you to really figure out who all is out there.
So now are you helping me communicate and with my existing base and also helping me grow?
Yeah, it really
targeted and relevant base.
Yeah, it really depends on the objective. So, you know, certain clients work with us to build a meaningful audience. In other cases, you know, we're working with big time brands that have assembled like as big of audience as you can imagine. Especially some of these media properties that, you know, they have such passionate fan bases. And in that respect, it's a matter of you know, the KPI, the key performance indicator, it could be increasing brand loyalty, it could be increasing brand perception, or ultimately driving the bottom line. You know, in the case of Holiday Inn, I always like to reference it, you know, they're often trying to really drive promotion redemptions. So in that respect, blasting out a mass message is only going to go so far, but when they actually target it to the right people, you know, they're going to be a lot more inclined to take them up on it.
What's an example of a targeted message as opposed to a blasted kind of generic message?
I mean, it's like the ones that you see on, you know, Facebook advertising, let's say. They're off to the side, and nobody can really see my hand motions that I'm making.
They can't.
They're helping us, though.
But yeah, so those are, you know, everybody's kind of dismissing them. The click-through rates are just terrible. But when you actually direct it at somebody, you know, I feel like I've said it before, but, you know, once again, addressing them by name is obviously something that email has done a great job of over the last decade. But at the same time, you know, people are starting to kind of see through that at this point. But on social, maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. But the other key is including those data points. When you can really not only, you know, talk to me, but also tell me why you're talking to me, that's the big key.
Now, go ahead, Karen.
I was just going to say Atlanta Tech Village has used InsightPool, and it was a really neat experience for me. As a community manager, we're in charge of a lot of our marketing, but it's not specific, you know, where we have a whole lot of time set aside for that. So just sitting down with these guys for a few minutes was really helpful in that they were able to help us target some really key people that we wanted to share our mission and vision with,
right?
In a very efficient manner. And then the other really neat thing is we were featured on a USA Today article, and using InsightPool, they really helped us strategically ask folks and followers that we had to share that message and share that article. And it got viewed a whole lot more times than it would have if we had just been posting.
Right, mm-hmm. If you had just done your normal posting.
Yeah. So it's been really great for us.
Okay, tell me if I'm in La La Land or if this is becoming reality. Am I likely to see in the near future a note that says, hey, Stone, maybe you should take Holly to dinner this weekend? I mean, are you getting that kind of data?
Well, we're not a matchmaking service.
well, Holly's my wife, not my girlfriend. But, I mean, are we getting there? You can at least now say, hey, Stone, and you're getting to where you'll know about Holly as well?
Yeah, so just to give you a little deeper insight into kind of what we're aggregating, I the way I describe it is a quarter of our equation is focused on the identification piece. Three quarters is focused on the actual engagement. But related to the identification piece, you know, there's the explicit layer, which is stuff that you've like readily, you know, admitted on, whether it be Twitter, LinkedIn, any of the networks that are out there, and we can aggregate a bunch of those together. Then there's the implicit layer of basically just starting to make assumptions based on, you know, in what we describe as interest graph analysis. So I'm going to learn a lot about you by just analyzing who you've decided to follow a little more rather than what you've decided to tweet about. You only tweet a fraction of the things that you actually think about on a daily basis. But if you only, you know, if you follow 100 people, I can quickly figure out where you probably went to school, what your interests are, hobbies, etc. Put those pieces together. And then based on that implicit layer, I can now start to direct, you know, important messages to you that, you know, you're going to be appreciative of as opposed to trying to dismiss them like you would advertising.
And you're going to send me a coupon for a couple pounds of barbecue.
Now, you mentioned using a person's first name as one of the things that drive action. Are there any other little tricks and tips you can share about driving action?
From a messaging standpoint, excuse me. Let me take a step
like
back.
What's the line between action and creepy? Right? Isn't there? There's a line you got to kind of be protective of.
Absolutely, and I think one of the bigger concepts that I'm trying to push these days is the whole notion of social drip marketing. Mm-hmm. You know, drip marketing has been popularized by email over the last decade plus, and you know, you send one message on day one, another message on day five,
and it kind of builds,
etc. But when it comes to social, you know, I think there's a number of ways to approach it, but it's not all about the messaging. There's also different types of impressions that you can take. Literally, it could be anything in the form of a follow. In the case of Twitter, you know, different actions such as follow, retweet, favorite, et cetera, just to kind of stay on the top of mind, develop a rapport with certain people.
Right.
But then obviously when it comes to the messaging, that's when you really, you know, really kind of, you know, start to engage with them and get them to take a desired action.
So, Kurt, you're in close proximity. You're hanging out at the Village. So you guys know each other.
We do.
And so when appropriate, you can let your clients know about his work. There's probably application in your world for people to tap into what this guy's doing.
We already have joint customers, actually, or just two Fridays ago, I was out with one, and they were talking about all those partners you were asking about. Do they know the partners to work with? They have enough partners to go with for several months already, and they were talking about how Insightful has been helping them identify new people, new bloggers, new other businesses that they could work with right now that they didn't know 2 months beforehand. But now from using Insightful, they've got new people that they could partner with. So that serendipity that we hear out in the market, then we're also, our offices are just down from each other. So
now, does the serendipity kind of extend out to like a technical problem? Like if you're having a technical problem, can you reach out to somebody that's in the technical side of his business? And
Absolutely. And I'll tell you a funny story that not necessarily a technical question, but, you know, when Curtin Company were trying to, you know,
Curtin Company, that's what we call it.
AKA Sidekick. When they were putting together a conceptual video, you know, it's a great way to just, you know, get some feedback in the early stages. And they, you know, just walked right into our office and, you know, asked us if it made sense.
I knocked first.
But it's kind of open door policy there, and everybody feels comfortable enough to,
you know, before you know it, you know, pretty quickly once you move in, you'll recognize faces. You'll start to know everybody before.
Right.
So I want to talk to some more villagers here in a minute, but before we go, I want to make sure that our listeners have your coordinates so they can reach out to you guys individually if they want to have a more substantive conversation on either front. Let's start with you, Kurt. What's the best way for folks to reach you?
They can find me on at sidekick.com, so sideqik.com, or you can find me personally on Twitter at Kurt Uhler, KURTUHLIR, on Twitter.
All right. And Mr. Wexler.
Yeah, it's insightpool.com, insightpool.com. And then Twitter handle is insightpoolhq. Personally, it's Adam Wexler, and I'm at the word painter on Twitter.
All right.
Karen, you must just be absolutely beaming with pride to have villagers like this. I mean, they are living out exactly the vision that you guys have when you're putting this thing together, aren't they?
They do. We are only as great as the sum of our parts, and we really want our members and all the companies to be the heroes in our story, and makes our job really easy.
But it seems like you're creating that kind of environment that you envisioned, where there is that serendipity happening. There are people feeling comfortable enough to walk, you know, into each other's offices and share challenges and solutions.
We do, and we have four values at the Village that we kind of ask everyone to get on board with, and everyone even signs a values agreement. And one of those is be nice.
Be nice. That's a good core good. Value. Yeah. There
nice.
You go.
Work hard, play hard. So right. when you see Razor scooters and ping pong tables, that's part of the work hard, play hard. And one of those is also pay it forward. And I think when we're talking about stopping and helping somebody for a minute or answering one of those questions or offering office hours, we have so many folks who are willing to do that. And that's part of that giving back that we have.
So you created this culture for the building and for the Village, and that kind of flows into the individual businesses.
Very much so. And David Cummings, that's something that he often talks about, is the importance of culture. And that's one of the few things that we can actually control. So the more that we can create that kind of positive giving back culture where people want to be there and they want to be at the Village. And, you know, a lot of it's just spreading the word and word of mouth that has caused a lot of the buzz around us.
So let's talk to these other two guys. Karen, introduce us, if you will, to these next two gentlemen.
Sure. We have Alok here from Umenta, and we also have Ahmad from Blue Menlo.
Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on in your world.
Well, we actually are new to the Village. We just we moved into the Village 2 weeks ago.
Two weeks.
Yeah.
Fresh blood.
We are fresh blood in the Village. Actually moved from a larger space to a smaller space, and it has been an unbelievable experience of the Village, and I think the number one reason is culture. I mean, it's hands down, when you have a supportive group of people going through the battle, which entrepreneurship truly is, and it's truly supportive as opposed to competitive, it really changes your, you know, kind of the energy level throughout the week, both during up times and down times. So it's been tremendous what they've done there.
All right, so your firm is called Umenta.
Yep.
What do you guys do?
Yeah, so Umenta is pretty straightforward. It's a site. We've created a web application that allows people to tell the stories in their life. So if you think about whether it's a grandparent or a parent, and you can send them questions on our system, and they can respond either by typing or voice recording. And over time, one story at a time, they build their memoirs. So it's a cross between Ancestry, Facebook, and a little bit of Wikipedia, because we bring some events into play and ask people about their experience with segregation or integration of schools or the Vietnam War or whatever it may be. So it's an opportunity for every human being to be able to tell their story.
How cool is that? I mean, I wish that we would have had this before my grandmother, particularly on my father's side, passed. I mean, there's just so much she would have shared, and she'd have never probably been able to type it at that age, but we could have set her up where she could have recorded some stories and asked her questions, huh?
That's exactly right. And part of the impetus for this was when my grandfather passed, he was actually in his mid-30s when India gained independence. And we don't have one story from him about that period of time. And that was challenging for me. And so my cousin and I set out to build this. And 8 months later, we launched it. And now we're kind of out and running and trying to fix it as quickly as we can.
So now
that's the reality of technology.
What's the challenge? Is the challenge getting people to tell their stories, or the challenge is what?
No, there's not. The challenge is definitely not getting people to tell their stories. We launched an alpha phase in early February, and we're going through a 90-day process to fix it. And so basically in technology, you launch an alpha phase, and you know there's lots of bugs in it. And so we've got a number of users on there helping us work through that. And then from there, the two biggest challenges we're going to have is obviously exposure and broad marketing.
Right.
And for startups, you don't have a huge marketing budget to go out and do that. So we've got to be very, very thoughtful and very, very smart about how we go out and market the product. And on top of that, though, we've also, in addition to that free platform that I've talked about, we've built products on top of it. So when we went out and through our customer discovery process, which is big in the startup community, is we found that a lot of customers, when I say customers, would be, for example, a family. They wanted a private experience, and they wanted us to do a lot of the interviewing and help them go get the photos uploaded. get that going so they have a private family interactive biography. And so that's something that we've been able to charge for and get families started in that process.
And short-term, long-term objectives, have you put some thought into what you want to have accomplished by when?
Yeah, I think so our goal is by the end of this year to really have gone through that family project with 20, 30 families, and we want to get up to multiple hundreds per year. It's not an inexpensive product, but it's something that a lot of families, specifically in our target market, really, especially those who think about planned giving and think about legacy, it's really an important piece of their life at this stage. It's probably what we call it is the greatest gift you could ever give your family. So longer term, though, the vision is to be able to aggregate stories around just about any keyword. So think about typing in the 1963 Selma to Montgomery March and seeing all these personal accounts, whether that's a person at the front, the back, the middle. They may have not even agreed with the march, but at least you're getting personal accounts of history from the people who lived it, as opposed to the curators who chop it up and write it the way they want to.
So when you're kind of communicating with your families, are they initially they want this to be a private thing? How are you going to get to convince them that maybe that you should be sharing this publicly? Are you going to make it anonymous? Or,
well, what we've found with families is that there's a mix. So there's some set of stories that they want private. And on our system, every individual in the system has a beneficiary. So they can keep stories private and then pass those stories down when they're at that time. You can also selectively share those stories with just your family or just your friends. And then lastly, you can make them public. So we try to encourage families to have a mix of stories. Generally, when they're giving a story about an event, they're much more open to make it public. When they're talking about a story in their own personal life, whether it's with children or loss of a child or loss of a family member, they'll want to keep those private. So we tend to see those break on that line.
And there's a box they can check that says you can give it to Wexler or not for his insight pool stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. I got to dodge. There will definitely be a lot of rich content that pulls out of here. That's absolutely true.
Now, do you need or want money? What about the funding process?
So we raised a small round of angel funding about 4 months ago. We just started using the capital recently. So it's been great. We're hiring right now. We're hiring both developers as well as what we're calling legacy concierge, which are people that are generally have a journalism background but like to sit and ask questions to family, to people, especially to seniors, and kind of pull apart some of the key stories in their life. So we're hiring, we're growing, we're pretty aggressive, and I think a place like Atlanta Tech Village, there's no time for sleep in a place like ATV. So it's been a really a fun ride right now. After we've got through the launch, it's really been a roller coaster, but a very positive one.
Now, he passed the value test, I guess, he and his team. So what else was it that drew you to this outfit? Because I'm sure you have no shortage of people that are raising their hands saying, hey, we want to be a part of this thing too. What else drew you?
Every member that is in the village has had an in-person meeting with us. So we do.
It's like the condo board.
But way better. And there's no weird fees or anything like that. But yeah, it's just about meeting and making making sure that they're a good fit for our culture and
right.
That it's kind of even the way we've set it up with our values and what we do, there's a bit of self-selection. You know, if you're that person who maybe doesn't really want to interact or you're a head down kind of guy that, you know, doesn't want to.
Right. Maybe it's not the right fit.
Yeah,
maybe,
and
there's
that's
plenty
okay.
of places for you mm-hmm. that, you know, that you can find to do that.
So there is a bit of self-selection and then we meet everybody and if they're a good culture fit and we always do a little bit of research about what their business is and is it a sustainable mm-hmm. business? And from there, come on in, you know.
Come on, join the party,
yeah.
right?
So I want to bring in Ahmad for a lot of reasons, not the least of which he's the only guy in the studio with a tie on. So I think he's going to have a very different perspective.
He looks pretty sharp.
So Ahmad, who are you with?
I'm with Blue Medlow. It's a healthcare firm or mobile solutions firm specifically for healthcare providers. And, we working on a variety of products. However, our first product is really what I like to call a disaster mitigator in OR scenarios when you have like trauma situations with people bleeding out, systems failing within themselves while they're on the OR table. There are certain procedures that doctors take or go through in order to, you know, there's the lower order medicine, which is kind of the basic by the books, you know, stuff that you can read off of a checklist. And then there's higher order medicine, which comes from, you know, the doctor's experience and, you know, how long they've been doing surgery or whatnot. So what we do is take care of the lower order medicine, which would be, you know, oh God, just a number of things. But the idea is when that's taken care of, doctors can then focus on their experience and, you know, all the different things that they've seen to, you know, if the lower order medicine hasn't worked yet, right? And so, I mean, the New England Journal of Medicine put out a study last year saying that people that use the software or manual processes of the software that we offer end up saving about 30% more lives in an OR. So the idea is that, you know, a lot of hospitals are rolling out this type of manual process and haven't thought about technology to do it, right? So they have the manual process, and then somebody does that in the OR, then hands it off to somebody else to type it up into the system, which goes into a couple of other systems, and then you have to file that paper product away and or shred it or whatnot. But the idea is if you have an iPad in the OR and you just take care of all of that from there, logs it in the back end of the hospital systems, it's you could recall it whenever you need to, you know, you save a lot of money in labor and, you know, a whole bunch of $700 clipboards and $200 flat pens.
So how do you find the healthcare IT environment here in Atlanta?
Well, incredibly receptive for the one or two people we've approached. Right now, we're in a very, we're in a beta testing scenario with a large healthcare provider here. And they've just been awesome about letting us, and they'll hate me saying this, experimenting on their smaller clinics. Just kind of, you know, getting feedback from surgeons and nurses and administrators of, you know, how it's working, what the kinks are. I mean, we put it together with our collective experience, but they're the ones that use it every day, right? So we want to make sure the product actually is completely catered to them.
So tell us a little bit about what it's like to hang out with all these techie folks. And what you, there's a lot of IQ points roaming the halls there at Tech Village. What's it like, man?
It's awesome in that I also want to call out that I went to the University of Georgia, not Georgia Tech or not MIT or anything
still
like
let
that.
You, they still let you.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, you can have, you know, Georgia guys down there and still, you know, rolling with the best of them.
Right. So, but they make you wear a tie?
Oh, no, I had some meetings this morning. No, actually, they make fun of me when I come in with a suit.
I was wondering if that was one part of your vetting process, Karen. Tie, if he's coming in with a tie, you're like, I don't know if you're going to fit in here.
Yeah. It would question.
Are you too straight-laced to be here? But no, I mean, it's fantastic. And it's the thing I love about engineers, I mean, I have a philosophy background, so they come at problems completely differently than we do. I mean, humanities people versus, you know, very tech-oriented, very logic, systems-oriented people. Just the back and forth between, you know, the abstract thinkers and the, you know, the down-to-earth realists.
talk about how you moved from philosophy major to a startup.
Honestly, it
how
was
how are
Georgia.
The jobs lined up for the full? We're looking for a philosopher.
Well, I also got a backup econ degree. So
that was your backup?
That was my backup. After 4 years of school, I decided I needed to justify my education. But it was honestly, my buddy and I were living together and just kind of, we'd knocked back a few. It is Athens after all.
Right.
Decided that, we're just, you know, spitballing ideas and after
the what am I going to do with my life conversation?
Yeah. Well, he's like a mathematics and computer science guy.
Right.
So we're just talking back and forth. And, you know, 2 weeks later, the ideas we'd spoken about, we realized that each of us had independently researched it and looked into the market and stuff like that. And I was like, we could possibly do this.
So that's serendipity.
It is played serendipity. It's ATV to the core, right?
So how do you guys go to market? How do you sell this stuff?
Well, luckily, two of our co-founders are very, very heavily entrenched in the medical industry. They come from an established medical firm, technical medical firm or IT services medical firm, and they got us a lot of some of these introductions, and it helps having their parents be on the board of some of these larger healthcare systems.
Connections.
Right.
Help, so, serendipity.
And that's what it is. Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So now when you were building the idea and it was you two in a room, how did you go, hey, let's convince some people that have some connections and some money to be part of this? What was that kind of recruitment period like?
Well, those are two separate ideas. That was the first company I was, but that was just the same thing. You just kind of network with people.
How do you kind of recruit them to be part of the team, kind of buy into the vision when they weren't the kind of originators of
it? Right. Well, some advice I was given was when you ask for advice, you get money. When you ask for money, you get advice. So the idea is that, you know, you kind of sit there and talk to these people, ask them their advice. They're already established and kind of go.
So you make it so they think it's their idea?
Oh, yeah, they love it. I mean, it's just, oh, well, you know, oh, I met with you, talked about all this stuff. And let's have a follow-up meeting like 6 to 10 weeks later. It's like, oh, look at all the stuff you told us. I'm great at following direction. Don't you right. want me to give me money to yeah. follow direction from you?
Why don't you execute this great idea I had the last time we chatted?
Right. So, I mean, and that's really what it is. Like, I mean, you could go to like pitches and, you know, establish incubators and accelerators or, you know, pitch contests and, you know, fantastic ways to do things because you don't have to go through that entire courting process, right? So I read a quote somewhere, entrepreneurship is the act of young men courting old men. And that's really what it is. You just kind of go through the process of hanging out with them, let them get to know you, take them out for some drinks, and then, hey, do you want to get in bed together? So that's how it works.
Well, we've had fun. We've done like the Startup Lounge, Startup Riot.
Yeah, so, we've been in a round tag and all the good stuff.
Those are a lot of fun. So what's next for you guys? Where are you going to be investing most of your energy in the coming months?
So we'll finally have all of our team back in one place. So we've got some people on the West Coast, some people in Europe, and everybody will be in Atlanta in the first couple of weeks of May. So we'll have our engineer back full time. We're looking at a professional services firm to kind of do the integration work for us into some of these hospital systems, which is something that'll, you know, huge feature rich, you know, value add to just be able to integrate in all the different aspects of hospitals because it's such a closed system. There's so much, you know, security. Yeah, there's so much, you know, regulation to get around, and somebody that actually, you know, specializes in getting all that stuff together is very vital to have. And so, yeah, I mean, that's where we'll be going. And luckily, our partner in the healthcare field has been very good with their feedback. And once we get all those things up and rolling, you know, convert them into our first customer, and then move forward from there. So,
exciting times.
So I want to make sure that we get everybody's coordinates, and I summarily dismissed Alok before I gave him a chance to tell us coordinates. So you can find he and his outfit at umenta.com, and it's Alok@umenta.com, and Umenta is UMENTA.com.
That's right.
And so what's the best way for our listeners to get to you?
BlueMenlo.com, and blue is without the E. It's just BLU, Menlo.com. And then my email address is Imad, IMAAD, at BlueMenlo.com.
Very creative spellers in the tech community.
Now, Karen, the startup community obviously is exciting and passionate people, but a lot of times this is kind of a high-risk, high-reward kind of environment. Are you seeing kind of some of the mashups occurring that maybe some of the ones that aren't doing so well are forming teams with each other and kind of creating all new things?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to kind of watch people who may not have been known each other before, and they have desks next to each other, and we'll just kind of walk around in that area, and all of a sudden they're having these really great creative conversations and sharing ideas, and that's something that they might not even have been in the same loop on a week ago.
Right. So that's the beauty of having everybody in the same place, right? The proximity and of everybody together in one location allows those kind of mashups to occur. Like they can, at some point they could be working together, or but at some point, another point, they could be actually, their companies could be kind of merging together.
Very much so, yes.
You never know where that good idea is going to come from or where it'll kind of evolve into.
Or, you know, as you're growing your business, sometimes you start to see that gap. You're like, I have all of these resources, but there's this one thing that I'm missing.
Right.
And often you can find that right around
you. It could be in the, you know, a room away from you.
Right.
Well, and there's such an energy at that place. You know, we had the pleasure of going down there and visiting for a little bit. Plus, they've got the good octane.
And they got coffee. Yeah, exactly. That always helps.
Always. So,
I want to hear from this last guy. He's been waiting very patiently. We have from Visual Artworks, Mr. Daniel Flores. How you doing, man?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being so patient. I saw you nodding your head, taking notes. Actually, I saw you making fun of one of them. You were like doing the little. Now it's your turn, so now they can laugh. They can laugh at you. Yes. So Artworks, just like everybody else, you decided to spell it funny. It's WERKS.
It's hard to get the URL. That's part of the spelling challenge.
Is that what this is all about?
Yes. I don't know where that came from, but I knew that I wanted to show the creativity in the art with the word.
So tell us a little bit about this business. What are you up to right now?
So I'm a working artist. I've been an artist for the last 20 years. I'm an older dude who's the guy who had his head down working by himself doing his art. And so I'm new to the tech space. For the past year, I've been involved in hackathons, and I've learned a lot by just being around the right people. And that's what Atlanta Tech Village was very attracted to me, because we're moving. I'm making the move into the tech business by creating mobile art, mobile design, mobile web, mobile games, and designing the artwork for them. And so I've been an illustrator for a long time, and now that I'm working on my own game, I see the benefit of being around great people doing great things, including some of the people in here in this room who are working at Tech Village that can help launch the product to higher levels than I could just as an artist trying to break into the space.
Now, how important in your mind is kind of an artistic aesthetic when it comes to gaming and just, you know, the web in general?
Yes, and that's the part that I've seen in the
That's a gap, I think.
Yes, it very much is. But the mobile game, it has exploded. That space has exploded because of the smartphones. So now if I was going to try to get into it as an artist, I want to show the art. I want to show my real skills and what I bring into the table. And I think that's the hardest part for me right now.
Our producer is playing a mobile game right now, probably. So what is the toughest part about designing a game that works well and is commercially viable?
Well, first, it has to be attractive. You know, it has to attract the eye. It has to bring attention to the person who's looking at it. And so if you start with a good list of characters that bring in the viewer, then they'll engage. Then it has to be the fluidity of the gameplay. And that's the hardest part for the designer, for the artist like myself, because now I have to draw animations and all the parts to make the game look good. And so what we don't want is a video game that plays like the old cartoons that I remember in the 80s, where Thor's going across the screen and he has the same pose all the way through from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. And nothing wrong with that if you want to do a game like that, but I really want to engage and make the user feel like they actually control the character.
Lee, do you feel old when he says old games in the 80s?
Yes.
I was there. I know. And I know I feel old. But,
well, I bet he started illustrating with a paper and a pencil at some point.
Oh, yes.
Not an iPad.
No, that's my best friend, a pencil. I think I tell the story that I think I was born with a pencil in my hand. Yes, I've been drawing all my life.
Okay, so I got to talk to you, ask the same question I ask everybody. Show me the money. Where's the sales? What's the marketing strategy, the revenue model? Walk us through that a little bit.
Well, first step I'm going to do is talk to all these guys in this room.
Yeah, so you should. You should be hooking up with these guys.
I will get into a medical space also. I will not leave that out.
Well, no, that'd make being a patient a lot more fun if you can play games, right?
And not only will we have to partner with smarter people than I think I can handle on my own, but there will be customers too that will play the game. But right now the first step would be to have some type of advertising within the game, because we want to keep the game free in the beginning. We want to draw people in. We want to get users going. But I've also been exploring the idea of having sponsors in the art industry, because I am an artist and I've been an artist for a long time. I know a lot of art business connections. And so I'm trying to get them involved into a space that they don't even advertise in. The art stores, Sharpie, cans and paper. These are materials that artists use. And the game is based on the life of an artist, the first game. So it's called Art Life. And it takes the user through steps of what a real artist goes through in real life. And by starting as a starving artist, and then moving on through building a portfolio. And it's really in a cartoon version of it, and it has to be simple to use, but it kind of draws you into the story. And so it's very attractive to people who don't know anything about artists and what they go through, but it also attracted to artists to see their story kind of told in the game. So then that's where I'm looking at sponsors in the art industry to come in and help us advertise on the game, and that's where the money should come from first.
So now, are you bootstrapping this, or do you have investors, or are you raising capital? Where are you at?
I wish I had investors, but it's all bootstrapped from the very beginning. And my wife is a big supporter, and so I have an office at home. But I work out of the home because I need to do the networking with the people who are going to help me take this company, Visual Artworks, to the next level And that's why I took the opportunity to come into ATV when they offered it to me. And when I saw the type of people that are in there, the go-getters, the real smart tech space people, then I said, I need to be around here because I will pick up tips, I will make connections, and get further with the game and with the company.
Now, Karen, Daniel seems like a little different than a typical startup, but he still made the cut to become a villager.
He did. Just looking around at the people in this room, it's one of the really cool things is that we do have, you know, a variety of folks in there. And we have about, you know, 80% are the tech startups and 20% are contractors and service providers. And it's all about creating this really neat mix. And Daniel's one of the most creative people in the village, and he's really engaging with the people around him. And I think we all really appreciate that. I just popped by his desk the other day, and I was like, can you create this really cool T-shirt design for us? And he was like, sure. So there's all sorts of just...
Right.
You know,
but I would bet, see, he's not a typical person that you would find, right?
No.
But I bet every single startup would love to have an artist at the ready to draw something real quick and to make something a little better looking than they had themselves. That's a big gap in everybody's probably world that he can serve.
Yes, there are very few actual artists.
Right,
you know?
But that's a good mix to have some artists in there.
He can provide a lot, and that's a resource that I think if we didn't have it in the village, then we would really be missing it.
Right. Good stuff.
I am there to serve.
But that must be fun for you because now you're meeting all these people that are extremely creative in their own right, but in a slightly different way.
That's right. And then that's the kind of networking that I like to cultivate with my services, with my skills, and share with other people's skills and services.
And we first met Daniel at one of our events. We hosted Atlanta Startup Village. And that was one of our first big events there mm-hmm. at ATV, and Daniel came out for that, and that was how that friendship started.
So what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and get in touch with you?
Because you're looking for investors. You're looking for other web people to help you develop the game, right?
Yes.
And other artists to participate.
Yes, I have a pool of artists because I've been in the art space for a long, long time. So I have a pool of artists who also have their own original game ideas and characters. So I'm cultivating that. But I'm looking for developers to help us take these games into the right spaces that they need to be. So I have one developer who's in the Microsoft space, and he wants to take us to Xbox. And I'm open for that, but we need more to help us get the games built properly and put in the right space. So if anybody's out there is interested in working with us, they can check us out online, www.visualartworks.com. And the word works has an E in it instead of the O. So Visual Artworks, and you can get in touch with me through there. My name is Daniel, Visual Artworks. Thank you very much.
Karen, this is going to be such a fun and informative segment. I am really looking forward to doing this. Lee, we're going to learn a lot, I think.
I know. It's so exciting to see what's happening in Atlanta, and all this stuff is really under the radar. It must be exciting for you, Karen, to see it every day, each of these businesses grow and flourish and work together in ways that nobody could have anticipated prior to all being locked in the same building.
Definitely. I feel blessed to kind of be on the front lines, to be able to watch everyone grow. And you know, Atlanta Tech Village itself is a startup. You know, we're just getting going, and we've got a lot of renovations that we're going to start doing soon. And I've met a lot of really talented people in a short amount of time.
Now, how many villagers do you have right now about?
Right now, we have 126 members. And there's just a few more spots open, and then we'll kind of start shutting that down until our renovations are over in December.
And then you'll have room for a few more?
Then we're going to have room for several hundred more, yes.
Wow, exciting times. Well, thank you for being part of this, and we look forward to the ongoing relationship. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We'll be back next time with Atlanta Business Radio.